The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Janice Peary for the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Today we're going to be reading a lot of Christmas a lot of things about Christmas. I hope you like it. And the first one I'm going to read today is one you might have heard before or even seen the movie of. I think there is a little movie of it out there. How the Grinch Stole Christmas by Dr. Seuss. Good old Dr. Seuss. Here we go. How the Grinch Stole Christmas by Dr. Seuss. Every who down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot, but the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not. The Grinch hated Christmas, the whole Christmas season. Now, please don't ask why. No one quite knows the reason. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. It could be, perhaps, that his shoes were too tight. But I think that the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was two sizes too small. And he sure looked, there he is in his little cave, looking all grumpy. But whatever the reason, his heart or his shoes, he stood there on Christmas Eve, hating the Whos, staring down from his cave with a sour, grinchy frown, as the warm lighted windows below in their town, for he knew every Who down in Whoville beneath was busy now, hanging a mistletoe wreath. And they're hanging their stockings, he snarled with a sneer. Tomorrow is Christmas. It's practically here. Then he growled, with his Grinch fingers nervously drumming, I must find some way to stop Christmas from coming. For tomorrow, he knew, all the Who girls and boys would wake up bright and early. They'd rush for their toys. And then, oh, the noise, oh, the noise, oh, the noise. That's one thing he hated. The noise, 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 noise. He was a mean old guy, wasn't he? Then the Whos, young and old, would sit down to a feast. And they'd feast, and they'd feast, and they'd feast, 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 feast. They would feast on Who pudding and the rare Who roast beef. Beast, which was something the Grinch couldn't stand in the least. And there's the whole town on a long, long, long table, all sitting down to have the Christmas feast together. And then they'd do something he liked least of all. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, would stand close together with Christmas bells ringing. They'd stand hand in hand, and the Whos would start singing. They'd sing, and they'd sing, and they'd sing, 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 sing. And the more the Grinch thought of this Whoville Christmas sing, the more the Grinch thought, I must stop this whole thing. Why, for 53 years I've put up with it now. I must stop this Christmas from coming. But how? Then he got an idea, an awful idea. The Grinch got a wonderful, awful idea. I know just what to do, the Grinch laughed in his throat. And he made a quick Santa Claus hat and coat. And then he chuckled and clucked. What a great Grinchy gift! With this coat and this hat, I look just like Saint Nick. All I need is a reindeer. The Grinch looked around. But since reindeer are scarce, there were none to be found. Did that stop the old Grinch? No, the Grinch simply said. If I can't find a reindeer, I'll make one instead. So he called his dog Max. Then he took some red thread and he tied a big horn on the top of Max's head. It looks really funny because there's only one horn up there. He doesn't have the other antler to make him look like a reindeer. Then he loaded some bags and some old empty sacks on a ramshackle sleigh, and he hitched up old Max. Then the Grinch said, get up, and the sleigh started down towards the homes where the Whos lay a snooze in their town. All their windows were dark. Quiet snow filled the air. All the Whos were all dreaming sweet dreams without care. when he came to the first little house on the square. "This is stop number one," the old Grinchy Claus hissed, and he climbed to the roof, empty bags in his fist. Then he slid down the chimney, a rather tight pinch. But if Santa could do it, then so could the Grinch. He got stuck only once for a moment or two, then he stuck his head out of the fireplace flue, where all the little hoose stockings all hung in a row. "These stockings," he grinned, "are the first things to go." Then he slithered and slunk with a smile most unpleasant around the whole room, and he took every present. Pop guns and bicycles, roller skates, drums, checkerboards, tricycles, popcorn, and plums. And he stuffed them in his bag. Then the Grinch very nimbly stuffed all the bags one by one up the chimney. Then he slunk to the icebox. He took the Who's feast. He took the Who pudding. He took the roast beast. He cleaned out that icebox as quick as a flash. Why, that Grinch even took their last can of Who hash. Then he stuffed all the food up the chimney with glee. "And now," grinned the Grinch, "I will stuff up the tree." What a nasty old Grinchy thing, isn't he? Then the Grinch grabbed the tree and he started to shove when he heard a small sound like a coo of a dove. He turned around fast and he saw a small Who, little Cindy Lou who was not more than two. The Grinch had been caught by this tiny Who daughter who got up out of bed for a cup of cold water. She stared at the Grinch and said, "Santa Claus, why? Why are you taking our Christmas tree? Why?" But you know, that old Grinch was so smart and so slick, he thought up a lie, and he thought it up quick. "Why, my sleek, sweet little tot," the fake Santa Claus lied. "There's a light on this tree that won't light on one side. So I'm taking it home to my workshop, my dear. I'll fix it up there, and then I'll bring it back here." And his fib fooled the child. Then he patted her head, he got her a drink, and he sent her to bed. And when Cindy Lou Who went to bed with her cup, he went up the chimney and stuffed the tree up. Then the last thing he took was the log for their fire. Then he went up the chimney himself, the old liar. On the walls he left nothing but hooks and some wire, and the one speck of food that he left in the house was a crumb that was even too small for a mouse. And there's a little mouse down here in the corner of the page looking at that crumb and trying to figure out if it was worth eating. It was so teeny. Then he did the same thing to the other Who's houses, leaving crumbs much too small for the other Who's mouses. It was quarter past dawn, and the Who's still abed, all the Who's still a snooze, when he packed up his sleds, packed it up with their presents, the ribbons, the wrappings, the tags, and the tinsel, the trimmings, the trappings, 3,000 feet up the side of Mr. Mount Crumpet. He rode with his load to the tip-top to dump it. "Pooh-pooh to the Who's," he was grinchishly humming. "They're finding out now that no Christmas is coming. They're just waking up. I know just what they'll do. Their mouth will hang open a minute or two. Then the Who's down in Whoville will all cry, 'Pooh-hoo!' That's a noise," grinned the Grinch, "that I simply must hear." So he paused. And the Grinch put his hand to his ear, and he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started in low, and then it started to grow. But the sound wasn't sad. Why, this sounded very merry. It couldn't be so. But it was merry, very. He stared down at Whoville. The Grinch popped his eyes. Then he shook. What he saw was a shocking surprise. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing without any presents at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came just the same. And the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in the stove, stood puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. And he puzzled 3 hours till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. So he was really thinking hard. And what happened then? Well, in Whoville they say that the Grinch's small heart grew 3 sizes that day. And the minute his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his load through the bright morning light. And he brought back the toys and the food for the feast. And he himself, the Grinch carved the roast beef. And there's the Grinch carving the roast beef for all the people of Whoville Town. And they're all enjoying the feast together, including the Grinch. And he looks very happy now. And that's the end of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And he learned, didn't he, that Christmas isn't just about presents and decorations. It's about Christmas itself and what it means. And the next book we're going to read, actually the next poem we're going to read, is a very famous one. And I will read it to you right now. This very famous poem you will definitely have heard before. It is called The Night Before Christmas. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and a tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and they whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dancer, now Prance, Dance, now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blixen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and foot and soot. A bundle of toys was flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and in the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I'd laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his head, a wink of his eye, and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his fingers aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprung to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night. That poem that we just read, The Night Before Christmas, was written 200 years ago. It's a very old poem, but people still love it. Anyways, our next book is The Polar Express, another Christmas book, and by the author, where is his author's name? Chris Van Al... No, excuse me, that's not right. Oh, it is written by Chris Van Allsburg, and there are beautiful pictures in this book. He also did the drawing. So here we go, The Polar Express. On Christmas Eve, many years ago, I lay quietly in my bed. I did not rustle the sheets. I breathed slowly and silently. I was listening for a sound. A sound a friend had told me I would never, ever hear. The ringing bells of Santa's sleigh. There is no Santa, my friend had insisted, but I knew that he was wrong. Late that night, I did hear sounds, though not of ringing bells. From outside came the sounds of hissing steam and squeaking metal. I looked through my window and saw a train standing perfectly still in front of my house. It was wrapped in an apron of steam. Snowflakes fell lightly around it, and a conductor stood at the open door of one of the cars. He took a large pocket watch from his vest, then looked up at my window. I put on my slippers and robe. I tiptoed downstairs and out the door. "All aboard," the conductor cried out. I ran up to him. "Well," he said, "are you coming?" "Where?" I asked. "Why, to the North Pole, of course," was his answer. "This is the Polar Express." I took his outstretched hand, and he pulled me aboard. The train was filled with other children, all in their pajamas and nightgowns. We sang Christmas carols and ate candies with nougat centers as white as snow. We drank hot chocolate as thick and rich as melted chocolate bars. Outside, the lights of towns and villages flickered in the distance as the Polar Express raced northward. Soon there were no more lights to be seen. We traveled through cold, dark forests where lean wolves roamed and white-tailed rabbits hid from our train as it thundered through the quiet wilderness. We climbed mountains so high it seemed as if we would scrape the moon, but the Polar Express never slowed down. Faster and faster we ran along, rolling over peaks and through valleys like a car on a roller coaster. These pages are very hard to turn, so excuse me while I get this page turned. The mountains turned into hills, the hills to snow-covered plains. We crossed a barren desert of ice, the great polar ice cap. Lights appeared in the distance. They looked like the lights of a strange ocean liner sailing on a frozen sea. "There," said the conductor, "is the North Pole." The North Pole. It was a huge city, standing alone at the top of the world, filled with factories where every Christmas toy was made. At first, we saw no elves. "They are gathering at the center of the city," the conductor told us. "That is where Santa will give the first gift of Christmas." "Who will receive the first gift?" we all asked. The conductor answered, "He will choose one of you." "Look," shouted one of the children, "the elves." Outside, we saw hundreds of elves. As our train drew closer to the center of the North Pole, we slowed down to a crawl, so crowded were the streets with Santa's helpers. When the Polar Express could go no farther, we stopped, and the conductor led us outside. We pressed through the crowd to the edge of a large open circle. In front of us stood Santa's sleigh. The reindeer were excited. They pranced and they paced, ringing the silver sleigh bells that hung from their harnesses. It was a magical sound, like nothing I'd ever heard. Across the circle, the elves moved apart, and Santa Claus appeared. The elves cheered wildly. He marched over to us and pointing to me said, "Let's have this fellow here." He jumped up onto his sleigh. The conductor handed me up. And he asked, "Now, what would you like for Christmas?" I knew that I could have any gift I could imagine, but the thing I wanted most for Christmas was not inside Santa's giant bag. What I wanted more than anything was one silver bell from Santa's sleigh. When I asked, Santa smiled, and then he gave me a hug and told an elf to cut a bell from the reindeer's harness. The elf tossed it up to Santa. He stood, holding the bell high above him, and called out, "The first gift of Christmas." A clock struck midnight as the elves roared their approval. Santa handed the bell to me, and I put it in my bathrobe pocket. The conductor helped me down from the sleigh. Santa shouted out the reindeer's names and cracked his whip. His team charged forward and climbed into the air. Santa circled once above us and then disappeared in the cold, dark polar sky. As soon as we were back inside the Polar Express, the other children asked to see my bell. I reached into my pocket, but the only thing I felt was a hole. I had lost the silver bell from Santa Claus's sleigh. "Let's hurry outside and look for it," one of the children said. But the train gave a sudden lurch and started moving. We were on our way home. It broke my heart to lose the bell. When the train reached my house, I sadly left the other children and waved goodbye. The conductor said something from the moving train, but I couldn't hear him. "What?" I yelled. He cupped his hands around his mouth. "Merry Christmas," he shouted, and the Polar Express let out a loud blast from its whistle and sped away. On Christmas morning, my little sister Sarah and I opened our presents. When it looked as if everything had been unwrapped, Santa found one small box under the tree. It had my name on it. Inside was a silver bell. There was a note. "Found this on the seat of my sleigh. Fix that hole in your pocket. Signed, Mr. C." I shook the bell. It made the most beautiful sound my sister and I had ever heard. But my mother said, "Oh, that's too bad." "Yes," said my father, "it must be broken." When I had shaken the bell, my parents had not heard a sound. At one time, most of my friends could hear the bell, but as the years passed, it fell silent for all of them. Even Sarah found one Christmas that she could no longer hear its sweet sound. Though I've grown old, the bell still rings for me as it does for all who truly believe. And that's the end of that most beautiful story, The Polar Express. Now, excuse me, now we're going to finish out our last few minutes of this program with some poems about Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh and his person who owns him. We all know who Winnie the Pooh is, a nice little fat, round, fuzzy teddy bear, and it's Winnie the Pooh is the favorite of this little boy who owns him. I think his name is Christopher Robin, but I'm not sure of that anymore. I sort of forget because I haven't read these stories for many, many years. Anyways, our first poem is called Us Two. So, wherever I am, there's always Pooh. There's always Pooh and me. What would I do, I said to Pooh, if it wasn't for you? And Pooh said, true. It isn't much fun for one, but two can stick together, says Pooh, says he. That's how it is, said Pooh. Pooh's song. Isn't it funny how a bear likes honey? Buzz, buzz, buzz. I wonder why he does. And there it shows a little bear climbing a tree trying to get to the beehive. It's a really tall tree, and I don't know if that little bear is going to make it. And we all remember that of all things in the world, Winnie the Pooh loved honey. Hoppity. Christopher Robin goes hoppity, hoppity, hop, hoppity, hippity, hop. Whenever I tell him politely to stop it, he says he can't possibly stop. If he stopped hopping, he couldn't go anywhere. Poor little Christopher couldn't go anywhere. That's why he always goes hoppity, 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 hop. And this one is called Furry Bear. If I were a bear and a big bear too, I wouldn't much care if it froze or snew. I wouldn't much mind if it snowed or frizz. I'd be all fur-lined with a coat like his. And this one is called The Nursery Chairs. Nursery is a name, an old-fashioned name for playroom. So it's called The Nursery Chairs. One of the chairs is South America. One of the chairs is a ship at sea. One is a cage for a great big lion, and one is a chair for me. Shall I go off to South America? Shall I put out in my ship to sea? Or get in my cage and be lions or tigers? Or shall I only be me? What do you think? The engineer. Let it rain, who cares? I've a train upstairs with a brake which I make from a string sort of thing, which works and jerks, because it drops in the spring, which stops without the string, and the wheels all stick so quick that it feels like a thing that you make with a brake, not a string. So that's what I make when the day's all wet. It's a good sort of brake, but it hasn't worked yet. And that's sort of funny. He just can't make his brake work on his little train. This poem is called Forgiven. I found, one more thing. Nanny, when we say the word nanny in here, some of you might know what a nanny is, but others might not. It's the lady who looks after little children when the parents have to work. Anyway, so there is a nanny in this poem, and this poem is called Forgiven. I found a little beetle, so that beetle was his name, and I called him Alexander, and he answered just the same. I put him in a matchbox and kept him all the day. And Nanny let my beetle out. Yes, Nanny let my beetle out. She went and let my beetle out, and beetle ran away. Poor little guy, he lost his beetle because his nanny let him up the beetle out of the matchbox. And this is called Pooh's Hum. It's very, very funny because I know I had some honey because it had a label on it saying honey. A galoptious full-up pot too, and I don't know where it's got to. No, I don't know where it's gone. Well, it's funny. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For more information about NCRS, visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Read to Succeed on the North Carolina Reading Service.